Bible from Phoenix will be speaking, our first speaker, for 35 minutes. Let's give her a round of applause. Thank you.
All right, I'm Pineapple. I'm an addict. I'm short, so I'm probably going to stand over here so you guys can see all the movement. So grateful to be clean anywhere, especially in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous in real life.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, you know. So I cry a lot. I'm ready for that already. Hopefully you are too. And Nakona won. Like, I remember when I came up here to one of the events, right, and it was like a fundraiser, and it was camping, and I don't think I'd ever been camping before, and I don't know that I even really camped. I think we were here for like one night, and all I know is that I felt welcomed, and I felt loved, and I felt a part of, and that's what Narcotics Anonymous does for me, right? And as crazy as I am, and as different as I am, and as like not good addict as I am, like, people love me regardless in Narcotics Anonymous, right? Yeah, man, self-acceptance. Good thing it's written on this piece of paper, because I would not have remembered. So my clean date is March 20th of 2013. So I've got a little chunk of change clean, and I've been out of prison since July of 2016. So it's been a little bit over 4 years. And, you know, recovery has not been easy for me. And so I'm going to talk about my story, and I'm going to try to relate it to the topic, right? And so I remember being a little girl and eating all the sugar, right? And I remember when the sugar was gone, I ate the salt, right? And when the salt was gone, I ate the cookies. Right? And when the teacher at school did something that I didn't like, I was in the kitchen rummaging through the drawers looking for a knife because I was going to kill her, right? Because I'm an addict, right? And it talks about in our literature that some of us believe we had the disease well before we ever started using, right? And I know that that's my story. That might not be yours. And so I can look back at my life, and I know that I have this disease, right? And it manifests in all different areas of my life, right? Maxed out 2 credit cards a couple weeks ago to get like $1,000. Well, the price doesn't matter. We'll say I got a whole lot of tattoos in like one weekend for no apparent reason, right? Other than I wanted it. But here's the thing is, because I've become a productive member of society, I can pay that shit off, right? Eventually, and the rest of my bills are paid. So I grew up on the south side of Phoenix, Arizona until I was about 11. Talking about self-acceptance, man, I remember I would look into the mirror and I would think to myself, and I cry at the same parts of my story every time. I don't understand. It makes no sense. But I would think to myself, I'm going to be stuck in this skin for the rest of my life, right? And it wasn't because I was black, and it wasn't because I was thick, and it wasn't because I had a fucking Jerry curl in the middle of the suburbs. Like, it wasn't none of that. It was because I was going to have to be me for the rest of my life, right? And I wasn't okay with that. And I remember at an early age just wanting to die, right? Like, my disease isn't just about using substances. It's about not wanting to feel. My disease is about wanting to die for me, for this addict, right? So we moved to the suburbs, and I was the only black kid in my neighborhood who wasn't mixed with another race. And I got teased relentlessly for the first 2 years. And I would come home from school every day crying. And my mom would give me a half a hug, pat me on my back, and tell me it was going to be okay, right? And I wish that I could believe that, and I wish that that was true, and I wish that things didn't get worse before they got better. But it wasn't okay, and I wasn't okay. So when I made it to high school and I started using, all of a sudden I found a place that I fit. All of a sudden, the kids didn't care that I was thick, and they didn't care that I was black, and they didn't care that I was different, right? We all had one common goal, and that goal was to get loaded. Just one more. Just one more, right? And I'd show up to school early just so we could smoke cigarettes before we went in, and I would show up to school early so the dude with the ass could give everybody a dose, right? And I would show up to school early for for anything other than a lesson, for anything other than a good grade, for anything other than prestige, for anything other than change, right? And so that led me to the rave scene, and I was home. I was home. There was sparkling lights, and there was rainbows, and there was music, and there was a good time, right? And I fit somewhere. But that feeling, right, of never feeling okay in my own skin never went away. And so I used more than everyone else used. And when I woke up from the blackout a few hours later, my friends had to tell me what I did. I was walking. We were having a good time. No, bitch, we were carrying you all night. No, I don't. I don't. Is that, that's how that happened? Yes, bitch, that's how that happened. And so in high school, right, I had this opportunity to do sign language as a foreign language. And so from my sophomore year until my graduation, that was my major. And I remember being a little kid, and I always used to tell this story about the fucking monkeys, but I realized while I was at work the other day, it wasn't monkeys, it was gorillas, and it wasn't just any gorilla, it was Coco the gorilla, right? And if you watch a lot of, like, you know, National Geographic stuff, you know what I'm talking about. And Coco was a baby at the time. And Coco was learning sign language. And I don't know about you, but I had a problem with people, right? And in that moment, watching that show as a little kid, I thought to myself, that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. But being really good at sign language wasn't enough for me to stop using. That being the only class that I excelled at on a regular basis, that wasn't enough for me to stop using. Getting pregnant at 18 wasn't enough for me to stop using, right? And so I never was too fond of myself, and I used because I hated myself, and I used because I wanted to die, right? I didn't have any level of self-acceptance. And so at 18 years old, I get pregnant, and I'm going to tell the story because it's a good-ass motherfucking story, and it's one of my favorites. So I met the guy. Right? I met the guy, and he had a snaggle tooth and a crooked smile. Yeah, you guys know the guy. You know the guy. He had a shaved head and thick-ass caterpillar eyebrows, and he had on a wife beater and dicky shorts, and he was full-blooded German and racist, and I was like, fuck yes! Let's do this! Right? Like, because I believe I had the disease well before I ever started using. So my disease told me that it was a good idea to date someone who was probably clicked up with some motherfuckers that could cause some harm to me or him as a result of him fucking a black chick. So I always put myself in dangerous situations on a regular basis because I wanted to die. And the dirtier it was, the better I felt. The deeper the gutter, the better I felt. The more my life fell apart, the better I felt. Maybe that's just me. I'm going to guess that it's not. So I meet that guy, and it's an abusive relationship. Man, and the more he spits in my face, the more he loves me. And the more he holds me hostage, the more he loves me. And the harder we fight, the more he loves me. Because I didn't love myself, right? And because he listened, right? That first night on the phone, I remember he said, tell me more. And I said, okay, baby. Right, and I went to his house just one time, and it was like I never left for months. I was a fucking hostage and a volunteer all at the same time. And so I got pregnant, and I was like, ooh, this is a bad idea. I want to get high. It's fucking up my vibe. And I decided to have an abortion, and I go to the abortion clinic. And they're like, oh, we're just going to give you this quick little ultrasound. It'll be fine. I said, okay. Did you know you were having twins? No, bitch. And I couldn't do it, right? Like, it was enough for me to walk in there and take one life, and it was too much for me to walk out of there taking two lives, and so I decided to make a horrible fucking decision, and I had those kids, and they fucking suffered, right? And today I have some acceptance of me, right? Like, it's not my mom's fault that she didn't take the kids when I was fucking my life up. It's not my brother's fault. It's not my stepdad's fault. It's not my cousin's or my uncle's or nobody else's fault but mine, right? And I know that I'm not a victim of the things that I did in the past. I'm a whole new motherfucker today, making all kinds of other bad decisions. So I have those kids, man, and they suffer with me, and we go through a lot, and at 7 years old, they're taken away from me by the states. By this time, I've been in and out of jails, in and out of prison, on probation, off probation. Somehow I survived 4 years of probation, and all the while, their father, their wonderful father, he's in prison doing 10 years. And I'm a baby with babies with the disease, and I don't know what to do but to use. Right? And so when my kids got taken away from me for the first time in my life, I had proven to myself without a shadow of a doubt that I was a piece of shit. I wasn't no good. I wasn't ever going to be anybody. I wasn't ever going to get anywhere. And I should just keep using. Right? And so that's what I did. And that landed me in prison for 3.5 years. Right? And I made a decision when I went to prison. I said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to read this religious book that I hate so much, which I still don't like. And I'm going to do recovery to the best of my ability, right? And I had one fellowship at that time for the first 2 years. I was on a maximum security unit. During my stay in that maximum security unit, there was one meeting a week, and it was the other fellowship. I finally made it to a medium security unit. They had 5 meetings a week, and one of them was my fucking Narcotics Anonymous, right? They didn't tell me shit about the language. Let me just say that. So if you do H&I, let motherfuckers know so they don't get out and get embarrassed. Because for me, it wasn't any fun. People telling me, we don't say that, and we don't do this, and why? Well, why? I don't understand, you know. But we're different here. We have a different language. I identify as an addict. My time in the program is clean time or recovery. I don't use the S word. And the reason I don't use the S word is because that's not in our literature. And if it is, it's in there as a reference to the previous literature, right? We are our own entity. And so I went running with that, and I graduated a program, and I was stomp team captain, and I was section leader of the choir, and for the first time in my life, I'd become a productive member of society behind fucking barbed wire walls. And when it was time to go, I was afraid, and I didn't know if I was going to make it. And I had the luxury of having a relationship with my kids while I was there via mail. They never wrote me back, but I wrote them on a regular basis, and I sent them pictures when I got my prison pictures, right? And when I got out, their adopted mom, she said, your kids want to see you, right? And I hadn't accepted that I was an addict in recovery and Narcotics Anonymous yet. I was still going to every other fellowship looking for a fucking solution. I had 3.5 years clean when I got out. I was like, give me my HA key tag. Give me my CMA key tag. Give me that key tag over there. I want to collect them all. You know? It's fucking like Pogs or some shit. Like, what the fuck? You know? And I went to a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, right? I got gifted the opportunity to learn about Narcotics Anonymous. And I got a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor. And I started working Narcotics Anonymous steps. Right, and being of service to Narcotics Anonymous, and this became my home. I realized that every problem that I had in my life could be dealt with if I stayed here long enough. That I didn't need 6 other fellowships to fix the fact that I'm a fucking addict and I got a fucked up way of thinking. If I get some acceptance with that, right, are we talking about self-acceptance? Did I low-key stay on topic right now? Just saying. Right, like, I got some acceptance that I've got some issues in some different areas, and I work on them because I'm aware of them, because that's what I was taught in Narcotics Anonymous. What's the problem? What's the solution? First step. It's that simple. Like, I'm powerless over X, Y, and Z. I have a new tattoo addiction. What am I going to do about it? Get a whole bunch more until I don't have any motherfucking money. That's what the fuck I'm going to do. Right? That might not be the most mature decision, but I'm sure not putting no dope in my fucking veins right now. And that for me is enough, man. It's enough, right? So I get out and I go full speed ahead, and I get to meet my kids, but I tell her, I say, give me 30 days, man. Give me 30 days. I don't know if I'm done yet. Just give me 30 days, right? That sounded real gospel, and I didn't mean it that way, but I was crying at the same time. So there's that. Fucking weird. And so I get to see my kids, right? And I get to be a part of their lives, right? And I get to show up and pay for birthday parties and pay for soccer equipment, right? And those two little kids that suffered with me, they like kind of love me. I think they love me. I'm pretty sure they do. My son tells me he loves me. My daughter tells me she loves me. They're 16 years old, a boy and a girl. My son's taller than me. My daughter's my size. They're fucking got white ass ivory skin, and most of the time people think that they're my friends. They're, oh, hi, are those your, whose kids are those? They're mine, bitch. They're mine. And when people are like, where are your kids at? Looking right past my kids next to me, I'm like, they're the white ones right there. Those ones. And so, like, I get to be in my kids' lives, right? And I know that my kids one day are going to be angry. And they're no longer going to love me for a moment. And I find it hard to believe that after what they've been through, that that won't happen. But I try to live in the moment, right? So I'm off the topic now. I'm pretty sure I'm done with that shit. I might run back around to it. Who knows? And so just recently, I'm going to talk about where I'm at in relation to who I am as a member of Narcotics Anonymous right now. Right? And so I've made some decisions in my life in the last year. One is I don't believe in monogamy, right? And I don't believe in picket fences. I don't want to own a house. And I like living in my ratty-ass tiny house with no shower and no running water and a foot pedal pump sink and a composting toilet. And for some of y'all, that might not make no sense. And that's okay, right? But I've learned my truth, right? I hear people share that all the time, like, my truth, my, what does that even mean, bro? But, like, after staying here long enough, these things that I hear here start to make sense for me, right? And so me buying a tiny house out of a resentment at my sponsor because she keeps moving people in to try to save their lives and parking the tiny house on the side of her fucking house because that shit makes sense. I'm okay with that decision, right? I'm like, okay, so how can I do this that's going to be the least amount of crazy but the most productive for me? Oh, take out a loan and buy this tiny house. And whereas other people are like, well, why don't you just save your money? Why don't you just buy a condo? Why don't you just get your own house? Because my idea of happiness isn't living in a fucking house stuck in one spot paying a 30-year mortgage. My idea of happiness isn't walking down an aisle in a white dress. And I have to watch all my friends get married and find love. And I'm over here in the polyamory corner like, what's good? You know what I mean? Like, and that shit's hard. It's not easy to be different in Narcotics Anonymous, right? Bringing it back to self-acceptance in Narcotics Anonymous, right? That I don't have to do everything the way that you did it. As long as I stay clean, I work steps to the best of my ability. I've been out 4 years. I'm now on my seventh step. I didn't run through my steps like I did in prison 4 or 5 times in a row, like snappy, snap, snap. I need some practical application, right? And my defect is to be an asshole for no apparent reason to people who don't deserve it. And I've learned to be kinder and gentler. Right, talking about turning a defect into an asset, learning about talking about my feelings instead of lashing out at you because you hurt my feelings. Like, who am I? Right, I'm an addict in recovery. I go by Pineapple. I'm not hugging anyone today because my sponsor is high risk, and she's in the house right now judging the fuck out of me for being at a convention. You know, and I live in her space. And so out of respect for the people I love, the least I can do if I'm going to be out here getting my recovery on, right, is not hug anyone to try to keep her safe. So I've learned what works for me might kill you and vice versa, right? But I'm okay with me today and the decisions that I've made. And it took some time. And it all started when COVID hit, right? All of a sudden, I had lost my complete shit, and I was like, it is slut season. That's what happened. Straight, like, everybody's on lockdown and Pineapple is out there getting it in. It took me like 3 months, and I was like, okay, this is boring now. It's like, I'm over it. But in that, like, I've fallen for some people that are polyamorous, and I've learned some things about polyamory, and that's an outside issue, but it's not an outside issue because it's me. Right? And I got to talk about who I am and where I'm at so that if you're out there thinking, oh, it would be nice, at least you know you ain't the only one. Because if I come up here and I tell you exactly what homeboy told you and homegirl told you about that good sharing ass, I'm perfect, my life is great, we just got married, we just bought a house, I got a brand new car, all that stuff. I got a brand new car, I got a tiny house, I have multiple partners, and I'm happy with that. Right? And so I've learned here that it's important for me to tell the truth about me. Right? And today I can look in the mirror and say, damn, you's a bad bitch. Right? Because I've got some self-acceptance. I've accepted with all my defects, right? And all these things that I do that are not always, I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up because I only got a few more minutes. So there's this speaker and she wows me every time. And she has a bunch of tapes because she's like a circuit speaker. And she always shares about Narcotics Anonymous. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, ooh, do it to me, girl. Yes! Like, I got so excited, right? And she talks about a love relationship with Narcotics Anonymous, right? That Narcotics Anonymous will touch you in places you never knew existed, right? And I was like, ooh, I just goosebumps right now. I don't even, ooh, yes. It's so good, right? Like, and it's true for me. Like, this hits me in a spot nothing else does, right? Can nobody do me the way Narcotics Anonymous does me? And I don't have a higher power in the sense that other people do. I don't come in here talking about a God because I don't fucking have one, right? With 7 years clean, and sometimes I think because I didn't do it the way you did it, I don't have a God like you have a God, that I'm a bad addict. Right, and that in order to be a good addict, you gotta have a house, you gotta have a car, you gotta have a white picket fence, you gotta get married, right? You gotta have some kids. I have a 401k, so I've got that. We're good. I keep taking money out of it, but that's not what we're talking about, okay? I'm talking about I'm a fucking bad addict, and I'm okay with that. It's not a negative term for me, right? What I mean by that is I'm the addict that does shit different, right? But I stay clean no matter what. As a result of what I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous, it says in our literature that we come to an understanding of this program for ourselves, right? And so if you're newer than myself and you think I'm crazy, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. That's nothing new. If you're newer than myself and you're thinking after this convention you're going to go get one more, that's okay. Just keep coming. You don't have to use again, even if you want to. Right? And I'm going to close with this. My very first sponsor was a man in Casa Grande, Arizona. And he was in the other fellowship. His name was Old Man Tom. And he used to say at the end of every meeting, if I had make it to bed today without having had a drink or a drug, then I got a chance, right? And that was something that gave me hope. Right? And he kind of looked like my stepdad, and I have daddy issues on all areas, stepdad or otherwise. And, you know, he walked me to my third step, but I was getting high the whole time on something that you could buy at the liquor store. Right? Substituting one for another didn't work for me. But I adopted his saying into my own thing because I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and it came out one day and it kind of stuck. Right? So it's not all gumdrops, lollipops, rainbows, and unicorns. But today I'm clean and I got a chance. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Pineapple. Thank you. All right, I'm pleased to introduce our next speaker, Aaron from Prescott. You have 35 minutes to speak. Thank you.
Oh, let me start off by saying that was some of the deepest shit. It made me forget the entire reason why I'm fucking here right now. I had all this shit prepared, and then I got so deep into what Pineapple was just saying that I feel like I forgot everything I have. Good thing is I brought some notes. Damn, girl. I can't even tell you where I'm at right now with that. You fucked me up good. My name is Aaron, and I'm an addict. First, let me extend my gratitude and tell you how grateful I am to be here, clean another day, and in Nakona 1. This is the most ironic thing for me to stand here and speak to a room of my peers about a subject that I failed to practice for the first 40 years of my life. What could I possibly have to share with you about self-acceptance? I ruined my entire life, in my opinion, with lack of acceptance of any form. Myself, you, them, anything. I couldn't accept anything in my life, and I started to reflect when I agreed to come and share today on self-acceptance, where it started for me and where the lack of it really developed. For me, I believe that up until I was 7 years old, life was completely normal. I lived the Brady Bunch life. My parents were much older than most children my age's parents. They appeared to be my grandparents. And if you ever fucking made the mistake of mentioning that in my mom's presence, you're probably gonna catch a whooping. Mm-hmm. At 7 years old, I remember waking up. My room was in a loft in the same house that I live in to this day. And it was sometime after midnight, and there was a knock on the door. We live way out, away from everybody. Nobody comes to the door, especially at midnight. And it was the sheriff's department. And they were there to ask my parents some questions. And this happened 30 plus years ago. And I still tear up. Especially when I started to consider that that's where my life took a dramatic change that night. They came and they asked my parents if they owned a van, 1976 Ford van. They answered yes. They asked if they had a son named Tracy. Of course, the answer was yes. And what followed was the explanation of an accident, where he was by himself, a single car accident, and he was ejected from the vehicle and he was killed instantly. I needed to talk about that, but instead we pretended like he didn't exist. My parents had never lost a child before. They had five up until that night. I was the youngest. My oldest brother is 18 and a half years older than I am. He was graduating high school when my mom was pregnant with me, for which she explains how upset she was. You know, my brother is 18 and getting on with life, and she becomes pregnant and explains to me that she beat the shit out of my dad for a week. Like it was his fault. Let me also explain that I stand here before you with five felonies for aggravated harassment via text message. I have a fucking problem letting things go. And that's what that should tell you. I'm not done talking to you till I fucking tell you I'm done talking to you. You don't get to decide when the conversation's over. Now, from 7 on, things take a dramatic change, and that's because I don't know where life is going. My 16-year-old brother was my best friend, and he's gone. And we're not talking about it. We're pretending that he didn't exist. That was my first real experience with denial. And it carried on throughout the rest of my life. And I'm not blaming my parents in any way. The one thing that I can say about myself and my self-acceptance at this point is that I do accept where I stand today and the road that led me here. And it's been a long one, 30 plus years of active addiction. Where, you know, in our childhood do we start to understand that we're different than our other friends, that things don't, we don't react the way that they react. We're unable to understand things in the way that they understand them. And of course, you know, as that young person with nobody to talk to, again, my parents loved me. There was no doubt about it. However, my mother was and is someone who has a very sharp tongue. She's very angry at times. She's very fearful at times, is what I've also discovered. I'm going to share this with you real quick and about where I get some of my mannerisms, my speech, my sharp tongue. About 10 years ago, my mom had the very first car accident that she had ever been in, been driving for 65 years. And so she decides to do it good. She got a little PT Cruiser. We live right out here in the Granite Dells. And our road is very difficult to get out on 89. You got to gun it, man. You got to go. And this day, she failed to look both directions and pulled out in front of a fully loaded Super 16 dump truck. And it took the front end of her car completely off and left her sitting there in the seat with the seat belt on with no harm. Absolutely no harm, other than some black eyes under her eye where the airbag had gone off and hit her sunglasses. Other than that, just shock. So about a week later, we've got to go to her primary doctor for a follow-up, just to check her eyes and make sure everything's okay. And our primary physician was had been my physician since I can remember. My earliest memories were of broken bones and being in the hospital and him smoking cigarettes in the hallway. That's how old I am. So about 5 years previous to my mom having her accident, our doctor had his own accident. He was in a rush on the way to deliver a baby at the hospital and he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. He got into a head-on collision, became a quadriplegic. So at this time, during our visit, he is in his wheelchair. He has a physician's assistant who does all the hands-on things, and he's just asking questions. Again, he's been a family friend, not only our doctor, but a friend for as long as I know. So he's asking my mom some standard questions, like, are you still smoking, Gene? Of course, David. You know, fucking 70 years old, you think I'm going to fucking quit? I'm just asking. He says, because it can be dangerous to your health. You know what her response was? So can not wearing your seatbelt, huh, David? We could have let that go. We could have breezed right on past that. But we didn't. We jumped up and cut you right in the throat. That's what we do in my family. I don't know why. I do now. I didn't then. It's fear. Again, fear. So when my mom lashes out in these ways that she does, I've learned to discover it's when she's afraid. She is fucking afraid of you, of what you're gonna say, of information you're going to give her that is going to strike a chord. So to prevent that from happening, I push you away first. Or I fucking slash your throat before you can slash mine. again, this is something that I've only had a chance to look back on later in life. So my life progresses. I get angrier and angrier as a young child with no real source or outlet for understanding. So my mom believes at this point in time that the only solution is to put me in the Police Athletic League boxing organization. Good decision, Mom. I learned discipline. I became very good at it. I earned a couple of sets of golden gloves. And then I turned that against society. When I tell you I don't want to do it, it's because I know you can't make me. So I became that guy. So we'll fast forward a little bit. I get married to a lady who I get pregnant. And that's why we got married. We got married because when I explained to my mom that I'd gotten her pregnant, she explained to me what the next step was. And I agreed. So we stayed married long enough to have another child, which I'm grateful for. The entire marriage is nothing but a facade. It's no happiness. It is an ends to a means. We both now have a place to live. We both have some security. Things are going pretty well for me in my life, unbelievably, because I've transitioned from meth to OxyContin. things are good. So, let's fast forward a little bit further to where I fall in love with my wife's best friend. That's a good story, isn't it? Doesn't that make you respect me? Oh, I remember the justification process at that time, the exchange of unhappy state of being for this beautiful end-all, be-all. She was the perfect woman, in my opinion. She was raising two kids on her own with no help from anyone else. She was a bad bitch. I already had one. Again, I traded that one for this one, and I justified it. We were never happy. We never loved each other. You can look at me and tell me that you never loved me. You know it. We did that. So I got together with her best friend, and we stayed together for 10 years. And during this time is where I was on prescription drugs, and I was pretty well managed. I was honest about it. And the only thing she ever asked from me was that I be honest with her. Don't lie to me about your drug use. I can love an addict. I can't love someone who lies about it. Remember that. So, I am at the most successful point in my life. I own a home inspection company at this time that is thriving. At this point in time, to be a home inspector, all you had to do is hang a fucking shingle on your house that said, I'm a home inspector. That's all it was. If somebody paid you to do it, boom. And business was booming. I was making $1,500 a day, every day, 6 days a week, every fucking day. Wow. Now I can afford a lot of drugs. My habit goes from $80 a day to $380 a day. But I'm making $1,500 a day. This isn't a problem, people. I don't know if you can do the math. I'll break it down for you. I'm doing fine. For 9 years, I'm doing fine at $300 to $400 a day. But I'm doing fine. Then one day we go out to go sledding. My son is about 5 years old, 4 years old at the time. My daughter is 9. This woman that I'm with has a couple of girls who are 12, 13 probably at the time. And it's snowing really, really bad. And now this woman who I'm with has never taken a drug in her life. Never smoked pot. Two children with nothing more than the fucking aspirin. That's who I'm riding with. So as we're heading up to this sledding spot that I know way up here in the mountains, the snow's starting to get pretty deep. My son's starting to get pretty concerned of what we're doing. And just then, I swear to you, the radio goes out. Complete silence in the truck. And just at that second, my son says, "Dad, if one of us was to get hurt sledding, would we ever go sledding again?" The fuck did that come from? We haven't even got out of the truck. Of course we would. When we fall off our bike, we get back on it. Okay? Fast forward 15 minutes. We are sliding down a very icy embankment into the road is here, but there's an embankment where you can kind of stop yourself, and we're sliding down that sumbitch. And I got a sled that I got fixed up. I got that sumbitch waxed, varnished. I don't know if you've ever seen Christmas Vacation. Hell yeah. So my girl and my son, actually no, first she is on it by herself. And here she comes flying down the hill. And again, when you get to the bottom, you have to have your feet out to stop yourself. But here she comes, and about three quarters of the way down, she spins around backwards. And she is fucking flying. The ice embankment is too far. I can't run fast enough, but I try. And I miss her by inches. It's like in a fucking movie. And her head and neck. And it breaks her neck. But we don't know it. She's a bad bitch. So what does she do? She sits up and she's crying. She's got tears in her eyes. She looks at my son, who sees her hurt. So she grabs him by the hand and they walk back up the hill and they get on that fucking sled again. And she rides down with him with a broken neck. So when we get a chance to get her to the hospital the next day, because she's not having it, I'm fine. I'm okay. By midnight that night, paralysis has set in. And her right arm is not functional. I'm not a doctor. I've never played one on TV. Pretty sure that's a fucking bad thing that's happening right there. So the next morning we go... And we get taken to Phoenix, thankfully, where we develop a long relationship with a neurosurgeon who now explains to her how different her life is going to be, that she needs spinal fusion, three-level spinal fusion, and that you may never walk again. And so at this time, they send in some people to speak to us about this life-changing event, that we should go home, we should build some wheelchair ramps, we should get our life together for her being in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. Who the fuck are you? I just talked to a neurosurgeon who never said any of that. Well, we just want you to be prepared for the worst. That wasn't the time for that, you know, in my opinion. So, again, this was one of my first experiences, again, with both sides of the coin. You know, here's this very well-known surgeon saying, "I think things are going to be fine," but then on the opposite end of the scale, I've got these other people in here telling me that it's doomsday and you should get your life together. You know, she's never going to be the same, all these things. They were right about that. She would never be the same. Because they gave her pills. The first thing I remember about that whole event was, this is going to be a problem for you to have those fucking pills if I don't have any. And these were the first things that really started going through my mind as an addict. Then things start getting worse and worse, and my addiction is eating myself up, eating her up, and now she is also riding this fucking roller coaster of narcotics. This was new to us. The entire relationship, I was on drugs and she wasn't, we were fucking golden. Golden. Now, she's also on them. I start stealing them from her. Things progress. They get worse and worse. I start seeing things in her that I'd never seen before. What I'm actually also seeing is things in myself that I didn't know that I was seeing. But I'm taking it out on her. I'm projecting it on her. The things that she's doing, that's what's destroying our relationship. It's not what I'm doing. I've always been a fucking addict. I explained that to you from day one. So I get to a point where the inspection business is now collapsing. It's that year. It's where the housing market took a crash and my phone stopped ringing. Let me remind you, I still have a fucking $400 a day habit, but the $1,500 in checks are no longer there. Hey, something's got to change, and it wasn't going to be me. So, I begin the absolute destruction of my life. She begins to write me letters to try and explain how much she loves me and how much she wants me to stop using meth, because she now knows that you're fucking using meth. It's not just your pills anymore, Aaron. You're getting real weird. I didn't think you noticed. So, again, in the most heartfelt manner, she tries everything in her fucking power to turn me back over, to get me to listen to her, to stay with her. But she is also explaining to me very clearly that if I don't stop, she is going to take everything away from me. I already explained to you that I know she's a bad bitch. Where did I think that she was kidding? I didn't think. I was so absolutely self-absorbed in my addiction that I blew it off. I told her I wasn't doing what she knew I was doing, all these things, till one day I come home and she's gone. Not all the stuff is gone. I mean, her personal stuff and her, and just a note that said, I told you so. Fuck. So now, the 5 felonies for aggravated harassment. We go on with her being wherever she is, and she is so good at non-communication, okay, so good at no response, that it drives me completely out of my fucking mind, because I am so high, so hurt, so scared that I don't know what to do. And so I've texted her many times. We've talked a couple of times. It always ends with me fucking yelling and her hanging up. Till finally she texts me and says, don't call me. Don't text me anymore. Bitch, fucking tell me. So I ignore it. And then one day, in the middle of the afternoon, my phone rings, and it's her number. Holy shit, you see that? We haven't talked in a month. Hi, babe. Hi. You might know where this is going. The voice on the other end is really rough. And it's a sergeant from fucking Yavapai County Sheriff's Department. And I'm here to tell you that your girlfriend doesn't want to fucking talk to you anymore. So don't call her. Don't text her. Don't go around her. Man, I can't even explain where my head went at that moment. I will explain some things that I said, which were, check it out, man. I don't know if you're a shit eater or not. You claim to be. You know what I mean? You're calling from my old lady's phone. That means you must be hanging out with her. I gotta imagine you owe me a couple of blowjobs by now. Oh, yeah. So, I know what legal service is in Arizona and Yavapai County, and this ain't it. If your punk ass has got something to say to me, you obviously know where I fucking live. You're talking to my old lady. Come on up. Serve me. Or, don't fucking bother me. Yeah. Hell yeah. Let that dude know right away what's up. A couple of blowjobs thing was on point too, I'm sure. So, I stew on that for 3 or 4 days. And then, I don't know, it's 9, 10 o'clock at night. Pretty high. Pretty lonely. So I rip her a text real quick that just says, hey, I know you had some supposed cop call me, tell me not to call you, not to text you. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're doing. But I would much rather go to jail than not have you know how I feel about you. I love you. I've always loved you. And I'll always be here for you. 2.5 hours later, as I'm starting to nod out in my garage with a pipe in my hand, I hear a fucking door close outside. Again, I live in BFE. I have a gate 2.5 acres down at the bottom of my driveway that's closed. No trespassing, no entry. I just heard a car door close in my driveway. Shit. I forget that I have a stash in my sock. I see the pipe in my hand, so I run over to my toolbox. I lock it, throw the keys in the garage. I lock the garage door, and I pull it closed behind me. Yeah. I got something for you motherfuckers. Nothing. That's what I got. So as my garage is separated from my house with a little breezeway thing, and as I slam that door shut and I turn and look, here's 2 flashlight lights bebopping up the fucking thing. And it's the cops. And they're looking for Mr. Krueger. I just blew my own thing. That's me. I asked if you're on his property. They said, we think so. I said, you are. How did you get through the gate? Well, domestic violence. Domestic violence? The fuck? I forgot. I didn't know at that time, actually, that I was a domestic violence guy. I'm not denying it to this point. I did text her. I did text her some nasty things, too. I didn't threaten her. I didn't have to. I'm here to also explain a couple of things to people who get into text arguments. The state of Arizona takes it very seriously. I didn't know that. I thought it was a fucking joke. So I continued to have more contact with her until it unfolds like this. I get the charges. I get put on probation. But with that probation, I get sentenced to 5 years. You know, as long as I can do it on probation, I don't have to go to prison. I have the right to remain silent. I don't have the fucking ability. So, I keep going. I'm not abusive. I've never put my hands on a woman. It's one of the few proud things that I have to say. Got a great woman sitting here in front of me that I hope can attest to that. However, I'm a fucking prick. And again, while these guys are here to arrest me, asking me if I sent that text message. Yes, I sent that text message. I'm totally off subject, and I blame you for that.
You're welcome.
I do want to get this story out and the importance. I totally went around the self-acceptance, but I have a stronger point, and that is self-control. Self-acceptance is extremely important. Self-control is the first step to achieving any self-enlightenment, in my opinion. So, again, through my lack of self-control, I get sentenced to 5 years in prison. 1 year for each one of those text messages. Let that fucking sink in, and that is the absolute truth. 1 year for every one of those text messages that I've pled to. So, I get sentenced to prison, and it's everyone's fault but mine. First off, it's that bitch. I can't believe you fucking told the cops I texted you that I loved you. What kind of crazy is that? Instead of understanding, she didn't want to talk to me. Okay. So, I also want to explain a couple of important things because I didn't actually get to speak about my topic. I want to cover a couple of things. The importance of our IPs. There's a gentleman sitting in this room who was very present in my first meetings. And I used to like to share a lot in my first meetings because I had so much to fucking say about nothing. So as I share about this completely slathered in self-absorption thing, a dude sitting in this room right now gets up, walks over to an IP rack, and dumps this thing in front of me. And it says, "The Triangle of Self-Obsession." What the fuck is that all about? So I read it. If you've never read it, I urge you to do so. One of the things, the first thing that it explains to us in there is that we were all created equal. All of us. Self-centered. The only thing we needed as an infant, you know, were our needs. And as long as they were met, everything was okay. And as we start to develop and grow, then we get the first introduction to people, places, and things. So important in our life and in our recovery. It explains to us that we get introduced to people, places, and things, and that is our means to our self-motivation, okay? People that we like, that's where we discover that we like things, we don't like things, we have preferences, we don't. And then, at some point, through regular mental development in a normie, they can find their way through that, getting help from the people they need, not pressing other people that they don't need to, and where we get lost. What makes that difference between an addict and a normie? And so again, this same gentleman, as I speak again and share about more stupid things, the ironic part of this occurs, and he now dumps one in front of me that says, "Self-acceptance." My journey into self-acceptance was delayed by the thought that it was a feminine process. Mm. As a man, when we start to get in touch with ourselves, that's a feminine thing. I just explained you have a prison mentality. Okay? So, our ability to start to understand the things from our past, the things in our present, and our fears for the future. Because that's where most of us have the biggest problem. When we look at our future, there's fear involved. Fear of the unknown, fear of failure, fear in general. So, my end point of this is I was unable to find any of those things until I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And the people in these rooms shared with me their genuine nature, their genuine past. When I shared fucked up things with them, they shared more fucked up things with me.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. We all have these things that prevent us from discovering self-acceptance. Let's refer to them, for lack of a better term, as sins. The skeletons in your closet, the dark past, your secrets, the shame, the guilt, the obsessions. Through self-acceptance, true self-acceptance, and that is a long process for me. I do not want to stand up here and make you believe that I am enlightened in any way, because I'm not. But I am acceptant of where I am today. That does not mean that I am stagnant. It means that I accept the things that are occurring in my life today. And if I don't like them, I am working towards changing them. Mm-hmm. But I do accept that they are real in my life. And I'm going to close just with an understanding of how deeply self-acceptance is intertwined with this fellowship. And in the Serenity Prayer, I want to focus and put emphasis on a few words there that state this fact. Share with me if you'd like. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. My name is Aaron, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. Thank you.